Yo, 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 welcome to WNS9 Plus. I'm your host, Anthony DiNardo. With me, we have Tyler, no Jim, but we have our special guest tonight. We have Noah Howells from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. What's up, Noah?
How's it going, fellas? I'm glad to be on. I was thinking the other day, I was like kind of offended that I hadn't received an invite to North Shore 9 in a minute. Because, I mean, I've been a North Shore 9 supporter before a lot of your people even knew who you guys were, before Jim was even a part of North Shore 9. So I'm glad to be on. I'm happy to be on. This is fun. I'm excited.
You were part of the dark days then, like pre-Jim and Ty? That's tough. Oh, yeah.
Dude, I was like reading Jim Rosati blogs. Like I was a part of like Pirates Twitter 1.0 when like there was 1.0. No rules. It was
fun.
Yeah. When the team was good and there was no rules on the streets. It was a different world back then.
I'm sure we could throw some names around.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Right. Yeah, but no, we're definitely glad to have you on. I know it's kind of tough because obviously with you on the beat.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of times the games are happening. You got to do your job. We're live afterwards. So yeah, we have an opportunity today, a day game. It lines up well. Jim's not here. So it's going to be a really good show for one, but yeah, it's like a great opportunity to get you on. So glad to have you on. This is like your first time. I know we had you on in like spring training. It's like your first time like on the show since you came on the beat, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited. Like I said, I was waiting for the invite. I finally got it. You know what? Hey, it took a while for Nick Gonzalez. Took a while for G1 Bay. Took a while for Noah Hiles. All of us got the call, though. We're all here. So,
to be fair, I think the Noah Hiles call up has been more of a Noah Hiles issue.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just busting guys' balls. Like, I figured it would eventually happen. I completely understand the logistics.
It was basically like G1 Bay being like, no, I'm hitting 360 down here. I'm staying.
Yeah, I'm cool over here. Yeah. So
like I'm hitting baseballs hard here. I don't want to go there.
Yeah. But I mean, what I want to say is like when, you know, Nick Gonzalez came up, he's produced
right.
That long anticipated debut this year, but he came up and he's been producing, you know, you love to see it. Whereas guys that, you know, might've been earlier, like Alex Stumpf, are just, you know, they're struggling their way, you know, that you want to send them back down. Right. So, you know, this is why the timing is everything. We got you here in the perfect time. You're here. It's going to be a great show. We sent Jim down. We called up Noah. It's perfect.
Alex Shump, he just needs to be better, guys. He just needs to be better. Have you heard that anytime lately?
No, I haven't heard that at all.
Okay.
No, not from this Pirates organization. Not from any first baseman.
Hasn't been relayed to me at all.
But let me just tell you real quick, BetOnline is your number one source for NBA and NHL playoffs this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in on the game of blackjack or poker or unwind in one of our over 150 slot games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Don't forget to use promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts here. Oh, so let's go.
Maybe first people question. In charge need to do better.
Yeah. So Noah, when's Rowdy leaving?
That's how we're starting here, huh? I mean, no one knows for sure. I mean, everyone has their own idea, right? I mean, I don't see how it can last that much longer. But at the same time, I'm not confident, or I'm not entirely sure how it's gone on this long. So if I had to give an educated guess, I would probably say he goes until the Toronto series. Like they'll have him here for the remainder of this homestand, and then he gets one more road trip. And by then it's June. And it's over. But I mean, I think we are past the point of no return. I think it's more of like a logistical thing at this point. But still, I still think, I mean, would I be surprised if I showed up to the clubhouse tomorrow and there was no jersey right where his locker was? Absolutely not. Like, I wouldn't be shocked at all. But at the same time, I think the longest it could go is, yeah, after Toronto is, like, I think the expiration date at max.
I get it. I feel like every single weekend, I get what Noah's saying, I should say. I don't get why he's not gone, but I understand what Noah's saying, but I feel like every single weekend, because it feels like a weekend type of deal, every Sunday, it just feels like this has to be the last series for him. So I feel like it will probably be this weekend that he's done, and I think the writing's been on the wall. Because he's not playing. Like, he had two extra inning games and he didn't see the field.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about opportunities to make the change. I mean, they have two off days next week, right? Mm-hmm. There's the off day after Memorial, or there's the off day on Memorial Day. And then there's the off day. They play two games in Detroit, and then there's another off day when they go up north to Toronto. So, and then there's an off day after that series. So there's a lot of gap days where you can make some changes, and it might be more than one guy going up and down in AAA or getting DFA'd or whatever. So there's plenty of opportunities, but I've reached the point now where it's like, when someone does ask me that question, I just say the absolute latest date I could see. That way, you know, if I'm wrong, like, people are happy. But like what you said, Tyler, I mean, you look at it, man. I mean, at this point, what is he? He's a backup. He's not playing. And for all the concerns of, oh, we need to give him more opportunities, he needs to play more, he needs to get more at-bats. Well, like, they've given up on that line of thinking, haven't they? And if all you need is a left-handed backup first baseman, I mean, yeah, Jake Lamb, I wouldn't bank on him being your starting first baseman for 162 games, but I would think he'd be sufficient at playing 14 innings a week in some capacity, be it, you know, start and an early exit or a late game sub or something like that. I feel like they have that elsewhere and it's still probably more productive. So I feel like the time's coming.
How frustrating is it though, to like go talk to Derek Shelton and be like, talk to him about the Connor Joe situation, how well he's been playing, and asking him why Rowdy Tellez is still in the lineup, and him defending Rowdy Tellez, and then all of a sudden Rowdy Tellez is just not playing at all. Like, you guys have to look at a lineup after 3 days and be like, he hasn't played since we asked. What are we doing?
I mean, it's frustrating, but at the same time, it's like, we all know. I mean, it's not just Derek Shelton who's making these decisions. Like, Derek Shelton is not the one person who decides who's on the 26-man roster. And yes, like, the manager ultimately is the day-by-day decision maker, but like, it's not 1980 anymore. Like, there are other people who have a say and or have strong influence in where guys hit in the order, you know, who plays on what day, what matchups they like, what splits they like, what they don't like. And again, Shelton is the figurehead of that and he has to answer for it, but like, when he says these things, it's like, we get it, man. Like, you gotta say this line, and that's part of it. It's no different than, you know, any other, it's coach speak is a thing. Like, people, that term exists for a reason, and when something is bad, when you're losing or when an individual is struggling, you have coach speak to get you through those times. And we received a decent amount of coach speak this year. And that's just part of the job as a journalist. I mean, the last team I covered, Pitt went 3-9 this football season. And the guy I covered, he tried to give coach speak. He's not the greatest speaker, so sometimes he screwed that up. But, you know, he gave it his all. But in all seriousness, like, coach speak's, it's part of this business. And, you know, it makes for a very vanilla quote that's not fun, but good journalists can kind of read between the lines and, you know, talk to other people who can get you the information that you really want.
Well, let me ask you this too, because, I mean, I don't understand why he's still here for multiple reasons, but if I'm going to rationalize something and feel like, well, this is the reason, do you think a lot hinges on Ke'Bryan Hayes and his health?
Maybe. I would think that that's more a Jared Triolo thing. than Rowdy. I mean, I would think that with Rowdy being around, I mean, I guess, like, because it's like, are you saying, like, once...
I guess what I'm alluding to is...
You're alluding to
just tell him.
If somebody's gone, you just have Connor Joe. So yeah. Then it's like, well, who's the backup? Then it's probably Triolo. I guess...
But no, I don't
corner think they infielder.
Need at least one left-handed bat at first. Like, I don't think they would put a roster out there without a left-handed hitter that can play first base.
Well, they already don't have a left-handed hitter that can play first base.
Okay.
Touché.
Yeah, I set you up for that. But in all seriousness, no, like, I think that's more like the Triolo thing. So,
okay.
I could see that.
So the health of Cabrian, you're not alluding to, has anything to do with Rowdy. So now we have rational reason of why Rowdy's here then.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, man. Like, it might. Like, but like... We don't know how healthy Brian is either. So, like, that's another thing. So, I wish I had answers. Like, I wish, dude, if I knew when Rowdy Tellez, if I knew that the Pirates were going to DFA, I don't want to say when because you don't want to assume that someone's going to lose their job because that's rude. But if I knew that this team was going to do that, I would not be holding on to this information. Because a lot of people would like to hear it, but none of us have it.
Yeah, people would actually like you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they would. I will say, I mean, I feel like Pirates Twitter has been a lot kinder to me than Pitt Twitter. So that's good. I mean, it's only been a couple months. I'm sure they'll hate me by like year two. But hey, we're taking in the good moments now.
Yeah. Anytime I get a little jab there,
I'll
make sure I poke. That's all. Mm-hmm. But we love you, Noah.
I love you guys.
No, you don't. Don't lie.
Yeah, I do.
I mean, once again, you could have just like told Donardo that was a stupid question because like it had no relevancy of anything.
Well, I mean, no, because I could see what he's. I mean, there's like parallels.
Like to call Donardo stupid. It's what we do here.
It's fine. Well, I love Donardo. Like to be wrong. I never do that.
Well, you know what? This is why I prefer Alex.
Yeah, you're not the only one.
Well, anywho,
yeah,
I guess I don't know how long this can go on here with Rowdy Tellez. It feels like it's been every single weekend for the last like 2 months, and it's really only been like it's probably been 4 weeks or so of this Rowdy Tellez issue. He's been bad for a while, and it does seem like they've shifted to the point where he's more in that bench role. I don't understand what we're doing here. Can you maybe just shed some light on why he's still here at all?
I can't. I mean, it's really hard to play devil's advocate because when you think about it, this is bad for everyone. It's bad for everyone. It's bad for... Let's just start from the outside and go inward, right? It's bad for the fans. This is pissing a lot of people off who they go to work, they make money, and they spend that money on tickets, on memorabilia, on anything Pirates, because that's their team. That's who they support. That's what brings them joy in life. As sick as that sounds. No, I'm just kidding. And they show up and it's driving them nuts. And it's clear that this is pissing fans off. I mean, they're booing the guy worse than Austin Hedges last year. And I never thought it would get worse than Austin Hedges.
Seriously.
Let's go in another level to the players. This is counterproductive to the rest of the team. Because you're taking away, it doesn't matter who sits because of him. He is the worst hitter on the team right now. So whoever you're not playing instead of him, you're taking away at bats from a better player. You're making it harder for the people who hit before him and after him in the lineup. So it's counterproductive there. It's counterproductive to your pitchers because they're less likely to get run support. It's counterproductive to the coaches because they have to go and defend him in front of people like me, the media, who have to ask these questions every single day. They have to go defend him. The coaches have to spend extra time to try to work on something that's clearly broken right now. And it's you take it even further inside, it's counterproductive to Rowdy Tellez. It's clear this isn't working. It's not. And it's a shame because, I mean, I really do think this guy wanted to perform well here. I think he wanted to come in and, like, I know he gets ripped on for the Bednar thing. Probably wasn't.
Which again, I'm going to stick my head out there and say I appreciated it.
I do. I will say the shame in it is Rowdy shouldn't have had to be the one to step up and say something. It should have been someone who had been there more than, what, 13 games at that time? But he did. And the message wasn't the best. He probably could have been a little bit more articulate with how it was delivered, but his heart was in the right place. And I respected that move. I
agree.
The rhetoric wasn't great, but the overall intent was. And I think he wanted to come here. I think he believed in what they were building, and I think he wanted to be a piece of it. And I think that this was something he viewed. You see a lot of guys that they sign, they come here with the mentality of this is a one-year journey for me. I'm not going to be here. And their ultimate goal is like, hey, if I play well, I won't have to be here past July. I really think Rowdy wanted to play here well and then like stay here. Like, I think he really liked it here. And it just fell apart. And it's not good for him here anymore. I mean, this is not going to work. And he knows it. The team knows it. The front office knows it. It's just they have a plan that they decided a long time ago that this is his expiration date. And as we've seen in a lot of instances with this regime, when they decide something, it very rarely gets augmented, or they very rarely call an audible. It's going to be, right. This is what we decided. This is what we picked ahead of time. This is what our projection said. Our turning point would be our due date, whatever. This is what it's going to be. And it doesn't matter what happens prior to that date. This is the decision day. And that's what it is.
So to go back to your point about Rowdy Tellez, probably not needing to be the guy to step up at that point, and it being such a short period of time for him, it almost felt like it was something that he felt like he should do rather than him being the person to do so. Maybe more of a, that's the right thing to do, so I'm going to go do that right now, not really thinking much more of it. And obviously it's turned into more of a nightmare for him because he's performed so poorly. But with Rowdy Tellez having to be the guy to step up there when everyone else is just kind of quiet, and there's a lot of veteran type of guys here that they're quieter types. Do you maybe think there's an issue in the clubhouse with not having a vocal type of actual veteran presence here?
As someone who's in that clubhouse every day, I don't necessarily want to answer that question. But I do think it says something that he stepped up. And again, I'm not saying that other guys didn't feel the way that Rowdy felt. I think the whole team felt that way. I think a lot of people, and again, I really think that message resonated with a lot of people. But yeah, I don't think that he should have had to be the one that did that. And maybe he didn't need to be. Like, maybe I wasn't looking behind me. Like, there might have been someone trying to go up there and do the same thing, and Rowdy just got there first. Or maybe Rowdy said he was going to do it. But Rowdy, the way I'll answer that question is Rowdy shouldn't have had to be the guy to make that statement.
That's fair enough. Yeah. I mean, again, like, that's fair. I don't have a lot of animosity towards him for doing it. Like, I know a lot of people did, but you can't also do that and then have a 36 weighted runs created plus. that's the problem.
That's why
we did it. And it's unfortunate. I get it. And you're right. But that's what's going to happen. When you do something like that, you also can't go down the path he has, because you are going to get torn up. And he has, rightfully so, because of the production. I mean, it's fair because of the production. Mind you, I just want to point something out here, Noah.
Okay.
I put it on Twitter, but I'm sure there's a lot of people that listen to this that aren't on Twitter, right? So I just want to say something, because you made the comparison. And I never thought we'd see the day that someone was hated more than Austin Hedges last year, who was essentially a backup catcher.
Yes.
This guy you're bringing in because you're starting first baseman. And Noah, he has 30 home run power. This is going to play in PNC Park.
Short porch. How many guys have they signed?
All of them.
Since that damn ballpark was built. And we read it in the PG from Paul Meyer to Bill Brink to Mackey to me and Andrew. We all wrote, whatever GM signed him. We just think his back can really take advantage of that short right field. How many people have taken advantage of the Clemente wall in a Pirates uniform? Andrew McCutchen, I guess, would be the number one answer. And he's a right-handed hitter. That's like
Garrett Jones.
Garrett Jones. Did for like two seasons.
The Rule 5 minor league.
All the Nielsen runs go off the roof of the Miller bar.
I want to put this number out there, and this is off the top of the head right now.
Craig Wilson.
Rhys Hoskins has 10 home runs, and he would have 11 in PNC Park, just to put that out there. Anyways, this is another turn of that. But what I wanted to say is that I'm going to put out two numbers there for you. But the guy that's hated the most I felt like in my lifetime, right? Austin Hedges, 184 batting average, 227 slugging. Austin Hedges had a 184 batting average, and his slugging, the backup catcher's slugging with the Pirates was. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to get those numbers wrong. Jim's going to be on me. I was looking the year before. 180 batting average and 230 slugging. That was Austin Hedges' numbers last year. 180 batting average, 230 slugging. The backup catcher who was hated. Rowdy Tellez, the 30 home run power guy, 175 batting average, 225 slugging. He's slugging and hitting worse than Austin Hedges. That's the first baseman that you decided, you know what? We're going to compete this year. We want him. That's the guy. That's him. That's him. 175, slugging 225. Good for a 36 weighted runs graded plus.
My favorite part about it, too, is like when they signed Austin Hedges, I feel that like it was universally understood that like this guy was the worst hitter in baseball year before the Pirates signed him. Like they made it very clear that it's like, this guy is not going to hit the baseball. He's not going to. He's here strictly for defensive purposes and to help develop pitching. And people knew this going in. And he was still so bad at offense that, like, despite that bar being set, people were like, this is still unacceptable.
Right.
And Rowdy's worst. Rowdy was brought in to be an offensive contributor. Like, it wasn't – he said – he talked to a couple people after the game today, and like one of the quotes he said was like, yeah, like I'm not, it sucks that like I'm not a defense first guy. Like I'm not a glove guy. Like my attribute is my bat and I'm not hitting. Like he realized that. And it's like, yeah, man, that's what makes this really bad. Is like Austin Hedges, like you had people defending, like, you know, going to like the seventh page or the seventh tab in FanGraphs and finding like the small little metrics, like, oh, look, his frame is like this or whatever. And like 90% of the baseball fans would be like, get that out of my face. Like, this is not justifiable. Like, with Rowdy, this was an acquisition that was made strictly for offense. Like, that's why they brought him in. It was to be an offensive upgrade of what they had at first base. And it's ironic because, like, the guy who they could have had was the guy who replaced him at his last job, who came from Pittsburgh. I mean, Carlos Santana wanted to come here and left Pittsburgh via trade to take Rowdy Tellez's job in Milwaukee. And they had the choice between the two of them, and they chose the other guy. So
they chose the downgrade.
They did, but like, this is a completely separate conversation. Those two should not be the options here. They're both bad. One's just significantly worse and the worst hitter basically in the like live ball era.
Yeah.
He's legitimately what I would be if I were to step up to the plate every time. Like, I honestly think I can put up similar numbers.
Yeah. All right. I got to give this guy a shout out. This is probably my favorite text I've ever received. This is from Mike Persak. I'm sure he's been on North Shore 9.
He's been in the comments.
Actually, yeah. He broke his desk live on our show.
He did.
He sent me a text of every first baseman in the Ben Cherington era.
Speaking of.
There you go. There we go. We have to name them. Shout out Michael Wilbon. I want to read through these names. I want you to tell me which guy you wouldn't have instead of Rowdy right now. As two Pirates fans, I want to hear your answers.
A long list.
No, okay. I'm gonna go rapid fire. Josh Bell. This is who you wouldn't like. You would rather have Rowdy over this guy.
Oh no.
Josh Bell, Colin Moran, Jose Osuna. Remember him? Philip Evans broke his jaw.
I'll take Thrillips. He can pitch.
Here's one where we might have a conversation. Will Craig.
Love me some Will Craig.
He gets hate because of that
video. Rowdy's not hustling down the wrong way of the first base line.
Hope he's stopped for a Sammy.
I feel like he's emotionally scarred now. But like before the incident, absolutely I would take Will Craig over Rowdy.
Here's a better question. Is Will Craig or Rowdy Tellez more scarred by Pittsburgh at this point?
Ooh. I don't know. Because I think I know Rowdy's next thought.
Will Craig played like for the Pirates. Most of his games he played for the Pirates, like they had like limited fans because of the pandemic. So he really couldn't get booed at full force like Rowdy.
The only way you know about Will Craig is from the internet.
Yeah. I interviewed him after the Futures game in 2019. Very nice guy. A guy who I didn't interview and I'm not entirely sure is a real person is JT Riddle. I don't remember him at all.
I was like, hold on. He played first?
Yes.
How many games he played at first? Holy hell. How bad was it that JT Riddle is your first baseman? Ben Cherington, what are you doing?
Well, now we're getting into the thick of things now. Big John Nagowski.
Give me him.
Yeah.
Yoshi. Yes,
number 69.
Yoshi Setsugo is...
This is where we get tough.
Yes.
So technically speaking, Rowdy officially is below Yoshi OPS line today. So I'm taking Yoshi.
We got Slick Rick Gonzalez, Eric Gonzalez.
Fernando
Tatis Jr.
Give me Rowdy. Todd
Frazier is next. I just want to go out of my way and say Todd Frazier is a personal hero of mine. And
would take Todd Frazier.
If you're familiar with my career history, you will understand why I love Todd Frazier.
I will take Todd Frazier right now at his age over Rowdy Tellez.
I will buy Todd Frazier a bottle of honey Dijon mustard right now. Ben Gamel, Michael Chavis, Michael Perez, Jacob Stallings played first base.
We take him.
Cole Tucker. Would you rather have Cole Tucker or Rowdy Tellez?
Yes. Tucker. I mean, imagine Vanessa and Livy at the games.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Easy.
Freaking Cole Tucker. Come on. He's batting second for the Angels right now. Come on.
Josh Van Meter.
No.
Yes.
Here's a name I haven't thought of.
Twice as good.
Bly Madris, no.
You're taking Rowdy over Bly Madris?
I would rather them both go to Japan.
I'm taking Bly. He's got defensive flexibility.
Zach Collins.
God, no. The whole backup catcher situation we've been dealing with, Zach Collins was traded for Reese McGuire. McGuire could be useful here.
This is a dude that's a special place in my heart, Yu Chang. When I worked for the Mahoning Valley Scrappers, Yu Chang was on the team along with Kai Tom and Mark Mathias and Anthony Santander. Anthony Santander's good.
Just named a bunch of bad baseball players.
Anthony Santander starts with the Orioles.
They're all terrible.
Anyways, after he left, he actually performed, didn't he? Was it in Cleveland? Or where did he leave?
Not bad, but like you had me on a terrible streak.
Okay. Diego Castillo.
Trash.
This is another name. Who is Kevin Paldo? Padlo.
Kevin Padlo. He in that trade, he also came from the Diamondbacks.
Was Was he the guy that we were talking to Szymborski about that he had some weird, like...
Oh, wait, was he the dude from Seattle that showed up one time? No, never mind.
No,
I don't know.
Padlo, he played, like, names. I feel like 9 games.
Okay, we'll keep him in. Vogelbach, Carlos Santana, Connor Joe. Alfonso Rivas. He was good for, like, a week.
He was terrible. Yeah, I'll take him.
Alfonso Rivas was better last year than Rowdy Tellez was last year. I mean, Alfonso Rivas has been better than Rowdy for 2 years, so yes.
G-Man Choi.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jared Triolo.
Yes.
Andy Rodriguez. Andy Rodriguez right now.
Yes.
Okay. And
he can bunt.
Yeah, that's the list. So shout out to Mike Persak for that list. That was...
That's been 5 years. And that's many first basemen.
Well, that's just, none are 162 games. You got to start. No, you're right. But it's still a lot of games.
But, like, there's not none of those are an answer.
Josh Bell was good. But he wasn't good in the Charrington era.
Yeah, he wasn't good to trade either because they got nothing.
Eddie Yean, he's cooking in Altoona, dude.
Yeah. So anyway.
Where's Alex?
Let's move on. Like how Ben should do. Just let's move on.
Right.
Okay.
From Rowdy. So we got some bigger problems too. And I'm not talking about the two games we've lost. You don't know Beat 'em Bucks?
Dude, I'm not the only person who doesn't know Beat 'em Bucks. I'm glad you brought this up. Because I got people being like, oh, what a bad look for the Post-Gazette beat writer not knowing Beat 'em Bucks. Dude, I know pirate songs, all right? Everyone listened to the game with the radio.
Apparently not.
I know We Are Family. I know the Gotta Believe 90s song. Jake Krause plays this video of an elementary school choir singing it in the press box. It's the funniest thing in the world. But Beat 'em Bucks, no, dude. My parents were not alive in 1960. So I don't have people who like showed me baseball that showed me. I learned a lot about the 70s teams growing up. And, you know, the 90s teams and stuff like that. I was cognizant of the 1960 World Series. I understand what happened. I even got a DVD copy of the game for Christmas one year. It was really cool. After Bing Crosby died and they found the film. But, no, I did not know that Beat 'em Bucks was a song. And my dad didn't know. I asked him the other day. My dad's been watching Pirates baseball for 50-plus years. He didn't know. I hate to, you know, drag people down with me, but Alex Stump didn't know either. I'll say it. He didn't know. He told me in the press box. He didn't know that was a song. We all thought that was a Sax Boy original, and I'll stand on business. That's my guy. I'm shouting him out. I didn't appreciate people coming after him in my mentions, ruining my golf round the following morning as I'm watching Sax Boy go to war with some guy with a Paul Skeens cartoon as his avatar. Be nice to Sax Boy. He's a nice guy. All right? I didn't know the song. I'm sorry. There's enough division within this organization right now. We don't need people coming after me over a song that's 60 years old. All right? That's what I have to say on that subject.
I appreciate you because I know the song. It was way back in the brain catalog here. I'd heard it. I wouldn't have thought twice about it. Like, obviously, I wouldn't have tweeted about it and put myself on blast.
Dude,
like you did.
I get home from work. I have to unwind. I watch this team every day like you guys do, but I got to go talk to them afterward. They don't want to see me. And they know they want to talk to me. They don't want to answer my questions. I have to put this little brain of mine to use until midnight every night to write the same story for, what has it been, 51 games now? They've lost the same way every single time, essentially. No, they've lost two different ways. There's option A where they don't score any runs, and there's option B where they score a lot of runs, but they allow a whole bunch of runs at the end. That's how they lose. There's two ways. And it's been a lot of option B recently. So I'm just recycling the same adjectives and sentences and thinking of a different headline and different SEO that doesn't mimic the same story I wrote less than 24 hours prior. And I get home from work and I just want to unwind. And I go in the comment section just to see what people are saying about my work, because I'm a narcissist and people are talking about Sax Boy Billy. And I'm excited because I want to gas him up. And that's how I knew it. So I was like, hey, let me end the night on a good note, some positivity. Let me shout out Sax Boy. Wake up the next morning to go play a horrible round of golf. And I got people in my mentions telling me, I don't know, ball, that Sax Boy is a cancer to society. And it just set the tone for a very bad day, fellas. So yeah, I'm sorry.
All I know is the greatest thing that's ever happened on this podcast ever.
Yeah, clip that and put it on TikTok.
Love it, Noah.
Yeah.
Hey, so first off, thanks, Brock, for the super. Appreciate it. And of course, since you did, we'll read this question. So question for Noah, what's worse, being on the Pitt football beat this year with the year they had, or being on the Pirates beat with their lack of success? Any other terrible questions you guys want? You know how to get them ready.
No. So
set up Noah.
Selfishly, this past Pitt football season was a very good career year for me. Minus one post-game press conference in South Bend, Indiana, and one glance. And minus this stupid.
No, you haven't.
This can go to hell. And Notre Dame won't go to hell because it's a religious institution. But, I mean, Pitt football was a disaster to cover this year for multiple reasons. It was clear after the West Virginia game. It's like, oh God, this is going to be a miserable season. The head coach did not help things in any way, shape, or form. And there were often times, I was very plugged in to that team. I had a lot of sources. I knew a lot that was going on. There's a whole notes file in my phone of stuff I did not report for one reason or another, to protect sources, just to save for bigger stories later on. And it was basically a weekly occurrence in press conferences where I'd ask questions that I already knew the answer to, but I just wanted to see if I'd get lied to, and I would be. And I had the luxury of calling out those lies and seeing a man who does not speak well on his feet try to do so. And that was fun. And it was good because I think some people recognize he actually has some information that they do not want out there. So it was miserable in the sense where it's the access was horrible. When they control who you talk to when you cover, and it's not just a Pitt thing, that's just college football in general. We'd show up to a practice not knowing who we were speaking to that day. It's very hard to cover a team when you don't know who you're going to get to talk to. Phil Dracovic, the last thing he said to us was the comment about grown-ass men booing. That was week two of the season. We never heard from him again.
Yeah.
stuff like that. It's really hard to cover the team. And that's no fault of the communication staff, Pitt's SIDs and everybody. They're incredible. It's just, when they're losing, everyone is wound up pretty tight, and they have to only put people out there who they know are not going to say something to cause more problems. And more often than not, that's seniors who are either A, just a naturally boring quote, or B, smart and know what to say and what not to say. So from a coverage standpoint, that was frustrating. But like I said, it was fun because I had inside information. This season, I love baseball, man. It's my favorite sport in the world. And even watching some of these losses where you're just what is going on? There's only one time where I was legitimately mad this year, and it was the Skeens game, the debut, when that debacle right before the rain delay, that pissed me off. Just because in the sense where it's if they would have got one out, that game would have just been bagged, and the day would have been perfect. It's cool. Rain, Paul did it, filed a story, easy, quick work day. And it's no, everything like I was steaming mad during that whole rain delay. And it had nothing to do with like the Pirates' success. It was just like this stupid team could not get one out. And now I'm going to be here for six more hours, which I was.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm having a lot of fun with the Pirates, covering the Pirates. It's a lot of work. It does make you want to pull your hair out when you see some of these things that happen on the baseball field. But, I mean, that's baseball, man. Like, you play so much. There's just going to be a lot of – there's going to be a lot of cool stuff that happens. There's going to be a lot of not-so-cool stuff that happens. It's a new challenge for me, which I'm really enjoying. And it's a new community. Like, I talk about how, you know, Pitt Twitter hated me or whatever. Like, Pitt fans were really good to me. And – It was a lot of fun to cover that team, but like Pirate fans are awesome too. And growing up a Pirate fan and growing up literally on Pirates Twitter, like the reason I got Twitter was to follow the team more when I was in high school. And it's how I met a lot of my friends today. And it helped, you know, grow my career and I guess my brand or whatever. So being a part of it now, getting to cover this team for the Post Gazette and travel on the road, so dream come true. This is my dream job. So I'm loving it.
Look at you.
Yeah.
DiNardo, I don't know if we want to like bring up the former beat writers in the chat that are asking him questions or.
Yeah.
I don't want to go here, but.
We can. I just want to give a huge shout out also. Steel City to W.
Yeah.
Appreciate the super. Super generous. And just for having Noah on. I guess we got to have you on more, Noah.
Hey, man.
Pirates fans do like you, I guess. They don't know the real. They'll get to know you soon enough. They'll start hating you here soon enough. But for now, they're liking you.
One of these.
So enjoy the moment. I can't believe you had that right behind you.
I had three of these sent to my house that week.
Oh my God.
Yeah, from friends and family. So
I would have broke them. So Justice back here wants to know. Talk about the press box broccoli.
Listen, I'm not a broccoli guy. All right. I'm just not. I want to make something clear. People in the Pirates media, very chill altogether. My one qualm with them is these people complain about press food way too much. I'm coming from the streets, all right? I'm coming from college where my first road trip for the Post Gazette was to Kalamazoo, Michigan, where the press dining for Pitt, Western Michigan was a crock pot. It was a crock pot. It just had someone's mom made it. And it's like, that was our press dining. So people are complaining about the press food, PNC Park. It's fine. You know, you got people like Alex Stump. Oh, I'm not eating that. And he goes and gets chicken tenders. Like, oh yeah, good job. Dude, I'm not a victim. All right. Do I go and frequent the place when they're having beef stroganoff? No, I don't. But, like, for the most part, it's fine. Even Pitt basketball, their media meal sometimes would just be pierogies and salad. That's not a meal. You're not giving me a main course. That's just two sides. I don't know what to do with that. At least here, I'm getting a full thing. They have a sandwich option. They have hot dogs. They have soup. These people are working real hard. They were honoring the Aramark people before the game yesterday. I gave them a round of applause. They keep my stomach full on game day. Sometimes it's a little rubbly, you know, sometimes it's not sitting well, but they're doing their best. Do other teams do it a little better? Some do, yes. I haven't eaten all the meals, so I can't say that some do it worse, but it's fine. I'm tired of Pirates beat writers complaining about the food here because I think it's good, all right? I'll stand on business.
But Noah.
The broccoli, I'm not eating the broccoli. I'm not a broccoli guy.
Yeah, but
so sorry, Justice.
You already talked about the belly rumbling. Who's got the best toilet around there?
Okay. We're not going to get into this.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
This is what I'm we're here for.
I'm not a public restroom guy. I'll leave it at that. I'm not a public restroom.
We bring Alex on to talk, you know, baseball.
Not a public restroom to talk guy.
I use...
Amen to that, by the way.
Yeah. The press
go down the street to the hill.
Situation is not ideal.
So you're like semi from the streets.
Yeah.
But you have... But you have limits.
Yeah.
I don't like putting myself in a situation where I might have to use the bathroom
in a
non-number one capacity at PNC Park.
We're not talking PNC Park. We're just in general, like they're like maybe Louisville, they might have a good bathroom. I don't know.
No, I don't use public restrooms. I do for peeing, but like not for the other thing. So like when the stomach's bad, it's time to go. I've left games. Like not when I like had a story, but like there was once at the there was one time at the ACC tournament this year. We can rank bathrooms, Alex. There was, I forget like what day it was, but like it was the day before Pitt played. I ate something that wasn't sitting well. And like I could have sat there and watched free basketball all day, but I went up to the other writers and went, I'm going home, fellas. Gotta use the bathroom. Not doing it here. So I just paid for an Uber and left. I've got a way about me, fellas. I don't stray from the plan. That's why I cover the Pirates. They have their plan. They stick to it.
Ben.
Yeah,
we're in the same room.
Just like me. You know?
I'm gonna call a timeout right now. We are 45 minutes in. We have now talked about Rowdy Tellez, Pat Narduzzi, and public restrooms.
Yep. Kind of the same thing. Honestly. Hey,
I didn't say that. However, I didn't say that.
I'm sorry.
I do have an actual, like, to bring it back to baseball, I'm going to reel this bad boy all the way in, and it's a big bass. But we're getting there. You talked about covering Pat Narduzzi, and you've covered a lot of head coaches over a period of time. Is there something about Derek Shelton at this point, and you don't have to give me a full-on answer, but is there something with Derek Shelton that makes you believe that this guy could lead a winning team with this organization?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like this was like his first true year where they were actually trying to win. Last year, a little bit, right? But like, this was like, I mean, they say every year, you know, the Bradenton flu exists for a reason, right? Like, they go down
Who says what? Because last year, all I heard was, we're a fourth place team. What are you guys talking about?
Yeah. Most of the time,
he wasn't there.
In the beginning of the year, we're going to compete. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. This year, I felt like they were serious. And I actually felt like when you look at the roster, and it's kind of sad to see like how low the bar was, but like when I'd watch you guys, like the comments would be like, I look at the roster. It's filled with actual big league players. Like, I think that was an actual quote that Jim said once. And like, again, kind of sad because like they should all be big league players because this is the big leagues. But at the same time, like when you're grading Shelton, it's like this is really the first time in his career where he's had something to work with. And has he been great this month? No. Like, I think he did not get enough heat, in my opinion, for how bad, and it might not have been all on him, but for how bad they mismanaged the six-man rotation. That ended up costing them two players. Or I guess it didn't cost them. They had the DFA Fleming and he's in the system still. But like that was just a disaster how they went about that. It cost them. I mean, it led to Martin having to go out there and get shelled way longer than he needed to. It cost them Rowanzi. It almost cost them Fleming, who I actually still think is a decent player. He's just had a bad stretch. And, you know, it put them in situations that they did not need to be in. Where if it seemed like they were never on the same page with that. Someone wanted to do it. Other people didn't want to do it. And they just went with it. And it never worked. And like that kind of stuff, that's not what you see from a manager who's going to put you in a spot to win. But I do think that Derek Shelton has a lot of qualities that you could maybe be in a position where he could lead a team to win. I do think that he connects with these guys. I do think that he's patient. Maybe too patient, but he's patient. I do think that, like, he's been around winning. I mean, he was around winning in Minnesota. He was around winning in Tampa Bay. Like, he's seen what it looks like, which you can't necessarily say for some of these people. Can't really say for a lot of people on this team. And it's tough. I think the easy answer would be to say no, right? That this guy's in over his head and he should be fired. Or whatever. I'm not going to say that. I don't think it's fair on him because I think a lot of the flaws with this group that we're watching go beyond Derek Shelton. I understand that it's his job to play the cards that he's dealt, but he didn't sign Aroldis Chapman this offseason. He didn't go out there and give him $10.5 million. He didn't sign Rowdy Tellez either. He might have had a, you know, a say in it, like, hey, I could see how we could work that in. But he didn't wait till March 16th to sign Michael A. Taylor. You know, another guy did. And he's part of this blame process too. So now if the losing continues, who's going to be the first to go? It's going to be him before anyone. Like, I'm talking like major heads to roll, because you're not going to fire your GM before a draft. And you just really don't do that mid-season often. You don't see that a lot.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know what they have with Shelty. I would say obviously, yeah, it's been more bad than good, because I mean, look at his record. But I think a lot of the problems this team has go way beyond him.
Sorry, Leonard, I'm sure I'm going to cut you off here, but
no,
I agree. Like, it's not. Derek Shelton's going to be a fall guy no matter what here.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think the Pirates have done more than right by Derek Shelton, because he took over a situation that most guys get fired from within 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
Like, the spot that he got hired into, most managers are fired long ago, and it doesn't matter what they did. I haven't seen anything that makes me look at Derek Shelton and say, this is the guy that's going to lead this team into the playoffs. To this point, I haven't seen that from him, and he's been given every opportunity. I know the roster hasn't been great, but anytime the roster has looked okay, not there. It's not there.
That's a completely fair take to have. I mean, that's what I guess that's the best way of putting it. It's like, he hasn't showed you anything to believe. But I think a lot of the things people are mad at Shelton for, it might not be in his control. Like, people are mad about, let's talk about Wednesday's loss.
Yeah.
It's not his fault Aroldis Chapman cannot throw one strike. Like, if he gets one out, that's a completely different game. It's not his fault Brian Reynolds bobbled a ball in left field and gave a runner an extra base, which immediately came back to bite them in the ass. Like, that's not on Derek Shelton. He made the right call. Like, bringing in Holderman in that situation with I guess I get why Bednar wasn't available, but like, he's playing the hand he's dealt. And again,
available today, for God's sake. They were losing.
That part we can talk about.
Yeah. I don't know. But
Wednesday, I think that's all fair too. Like, I don't think you can put too much on him, because he's dealt a short bullpen to begin with. And the guys that were there weren't producing.
And if he maybe had a more of a say where they could have had an extra arm in that bullpen this series. Right. Or, I mean, they had an extra arm today, but Jose Hernandez could have been here yesterday. Could have been here Tuesday too.
Sounds like he barely made it today.
I didn't see him in the clubhouse when he left. Like, he literally snuck in there like after the media left the clubhouse. Like, I had a source reach out to me. I want to say like 12:20. It was right before the national anthem. No, it was like maybe 5 minutes before the national anthem. Told me, like, I'm hearing Jack's getting demoted. And I was like, really? And I was like, I showed it to Andrew, my B partner. I was like, this is something we should probably look into. And during the national anthem, the Pirates training, that Jack got sent down. I'm like, my God, like, they didn't even wait till after the game. Like, what? When did this happen? So, crazy times.
Yeah. I think that's all fair about Shelton. Let's go on to a little positive thing.
Okay.
So, you know, it's your first year on the beat, obviously. I'll put it this way. Like, you talk about how crazy it's been this year. Like, at least you didn't endure, like, the previous years, right? I mean, this is still, for as weird and terrible it is, like, it's still not, like, 2020, 2021, 2022, right?
I was there in 2020.
Okay, that's fair.
I was working for that.
It was short, though. You only had to do 60 games of it, so.
Yes, right.
that was a blessing.
A lot of the games stories then.
Yeah. So. But I guess, you know, this year it's still a little bit better, but there's some fun. Like, Jared Jones is here, but Paul Skeens is here also. You're witnessing Paul Skeens come up and pitch. And even though that Saturday game where it ended up being 20 hours for that game to finish that you had to endure and it pissed you off, you got to see Paul Skeens. How's that been?
I mean, dude, that's something that I was talking with Paul Zeiss earlier today. It's just kind of like when you get in this business, like those dudes change your career. Like, if it weren't for LeBron James, Brian Windhorst would still be writing at the Akron Beacon Journal. You know, like stuff like that happens, and it changes your life. And I'm not saying
look that at Paul you Skeens, like you're already on NS9.
Yeah, right. Yeah, before Paul Skeens, I was nowhere. Right. No, but like, and I'm not saying that like I'm looking at Paul as a meal ticket, but like you get into this business to tell cool stories, and there's not many. There's not a lot of cooler stories right now than what's going on with Skeens, man. I mean, he is a generational talent, and I don't know how long I'll cover the Pirates here. You know, like media is a crazy field to be in. It changes every year or whatever, but it's like, I'll get to like tell my kids one day when they're baseball fans. It's like, yeah, like I wrote about that guy. I was there before, forget the MLB debuted. I saw his AAA debut. I sat, it was me and Jim were the only media there in Louisville. And like we watched it and we were both like,
Jim is that not was, media.
Yeah. Well, he was that day. I was, saw you guys recording the podcast like right outside the press box. But like, I will never forget that day. Like watching him warm up and it's like, this is just different what I'm seeing. And like, I called my dad. I was like, That's the best pitcher I've ever seen in my life. And I know he was going up against a crappy Reds AAA team and everything, but it's like that was unlike anything I've ever seen. And I don't know what his career is going to amount to. I mean, it's so hard to tell with pitchers. Like, they're amazing one year and they're nothing the next year. But, I mean, he's got the tools to be like a once-in-a-lifetime type player. And the idea of like, hey, you know, I got to document that. Like, that's cool. I have a file on my laptop where I save the press clip, like the PDFs of like my favorite stories I write, just because like one day, like, let's be real, newspapers aren't going to exist one day. And I want to show like, you know, people, it's like, look, like this is what I used to do and stuff like that. And I saved that one. It's like, there's a good chance Paul Skeens is going to be a special player. And it's like, I got to write the game story for the paper of record for the team that covered him in his home opener and his MLB debut. Like that's really cool. So yes, like showing up to the ballpark on Skeens Day it's fun. Jared Jones, same thing. Like,
yeah,
everyone has a sour taste in their mouth from that Mets game where he threw 59 pitches. Dude, like I remember that for a completely different reason. Like that was prior to what occurred last weekend in Wrigley, the best start I have ever seen. Like how efficient he was, and he was just cruising. That was incredible. Like getting to write about that stuff, it's not like me being like a Pirates fanboy. I will geek out over baseball, man. It's my favorite sport in the world. It's what I think about. I think about it every day. And like when I see good baseball, I get passionate. I get excited. And getting to cover that stuff, that's good baseball, man. I love writing about that stuff. So it is a lot of fun.
Good.
But it's not just that. Like even – we've been very negative to this point, but even the cruise stuff, like hitting 116, 120, 121, 120.5. Sorry, I don't round up. But even stuff like that, like there is stuff here. Like, there's stuff. Sure. It's just putting them pieces together. That's just, it's a scattered puzzle right now.
It's a scattered puzzle that isn't far away from being completed. But the way they're currently trying to put it together will not work. They have to go a different way about this. And I'm not sure that this regime is willing to do that. But if they are willing to maybe make a little bit of a difference, I don't think they're far away. Like if you just, they have to get better at acquiring players. Like I think they have people who develop pitching well in this organization now. Shout out Justice. I like that. I think they developed some good pitching. I mean, like, talk all you want on Ben and how bad he's been, but like, he has brought in some nice pitching talent through trades, like Holderman, Oviedo, Bednar. Like, those are nice returns right there. Those are quite literally his only good returns. But like, the hitting development has to improve. They have to make changes there. There's just no doubt about it. They have to start identifying better hitting talent in the drafts. Like, you look at some of the guys they picked after their pitchers that they took early. Like, they're guys that they've taken in the second, third, fourth round as hitting prospects. You just look at it and you're like, look at their swing. Like, what are you going to do with this at the big league level? And I'm not going to say any names, but I think you guys can probably put together who I'm highlighting. Guys.
Yes.
They got to change their thoughts on that. They got to change on how they invest in the offseason, because the way you look at this team right now, it just shows how poorly evaluated this offseason was by the front office. We were sold a ball club that was going to win games from fielding, from timely hitting, and from its lights out bullpen. And the weakness was going to be starting pitching. It's like they were looking at a little chart and they had it upside down. Like, the one good thing that this organization has to offer right now is its starting pitching. Its bullpen is an absolute liability. There is no consistency at the plate. They had it all wrong. Every investment they've made this offseason has not worked. They've got to get better at that. They've got to get better. We already know the limitations that come from working in the front office for the Pittsburgh Pirates. I don't have to go any further in saying that.
No, you don't.
When you have money to spend, be it $10 million or $50 million in an offseason, you do not have the luxury to be wrong. You don't get the luxury of being in Boston and spending a lot of money and not working out and still having more money to spend. You have this money and you get to spend it. And if you're wrong, it's going to cost you a season. You have these players that when you take over and start a rebuild, and you have Josh Bell, you have Starling Marte, you have Adam Frazier, you have Joe Musgrove, you have Jameson Taillon, and Elias Diaz, crazily enough. And you have these guys. And once you trade them, they're gone. Whoever you get back, that's who you get back. And you better make for damn sure you get the most out of them. And they didn't. And now, what do you do? I don't know. But they've got to figure out a way to maximize their opportunities for what they have to work with. And it's got to be a change in how they evaluate talent.
So Jim's talked about it as well, and I did last night on the postgame show. This team has spent like $20.7 million on Aroldis Chapman, yeah, Rowdy Tellez, mm-hmm, Marco Gonzalez, who everyone knew was basically dead. Michael A. Taylor, who everybody else loved but me. $20.7 million burnt, and you're under a $100 million payroll. We can bitch and moan about the Alec or about the payroll all day. It doesn't matter when one fourth of it's going to garbage. Because I'm sorry, at this point, what they allocated those resources to has been useless to this team.
Every player that you named, if they were to cut them tomorrow morning, they have internal replacements that are better, right? Like, they could cut like that money, like, aside from Michael A. Taylor. Defensively, Michael A. Taylor provides value.
That's probably the only one, yeah.
Sure.
Right.
But he's still a zero-win player.
But that's a problem, though. That's another problem.
And I'm not being facetious when I say this. Like, a replacement level player right now on this team is a net positive in that position. So, yes, it is an upgrade where, yes, Taylor is tough to replace defensively. He's good there. But yeah, it's like, I was thinking about this driving in today. And like, I was even adding in, I was just thinking about all the 1 year deals, like all of their free agents. It's like, they really do not have to replace anyone they're losing in free agency or when their deal expires. Like, you're not looking around. Like, even a guy like Martin Perez, who's been, I would say, a net positive. He hasn't been great as of late, but still, they're probably their best offseason acquisition by a mile, right? Who's been better? So even with him, like when he's gone next year, it's like you're not going out and being like, all right, well, we got to replace Martin Perez. It's like, no, we got Johan Oviedo coming back. You've got, you know, Quinn. You've got other guys like Ashcraft could be major league ready by this time next year. Like there's other guys. And I mean, maybe who won't be, but like maybe Thomas Harrington would be. Maybe Bubba will be. Who knows? And there's other options where, sure, you might get a veteran arm, but it's not like a pressing thing where you need to replace a guy in the starting rotation. You don't need to replace Yaz as a catcher. Like, you have a catcher coming back next year from Tommy John surgery, and you have a catcher in you have Henry Davis in AAA. And then you have, like, everyone else, like, all that money that's they spent, and even, like, again, on a guy like Martin who has been okay – you can take that and you can reinvest it again. It's like another opportunity to get it right this next time. And I think now it's crystal clear what the needs are. Just go get like two position players.
Dude, the needs have been crystal clear for a long time. They're just ignoring them. They signed Rowdy goddamn Tellez.
Not that they're ignoring them. It's just that they're incompetent of making it happen.
I'm sorry. No, I know you're on the beat and I probably shouldn't say it, but they are so stupid that they thought Rowdy Tellez was a solution at first base after they correctly went out of their way last year, signed Carlos Correa and traded for G-Man Choi, and first base was kind of solved last year. And then we decided, nah, we're good with that. Wipe the hands of that. Let's go Rowdy Tellez, baby.
Yeah, man, I don't know. I mean, I think another thing that some people maybe don't comprehend when they're like a Pirates fan is like, as a free agent, this is probably not the most attractive destination. And I'm not saying that like guys will refuse to come here, but I'm saying that if you want a good ball player and they're getting, other teams are bidding for them, right? Like in most instances, when the Pirates are signing guys in free agency, there's not a lot of bidding competition. In instances where they're good players, it is a bidding competition. And when you're competing against teams that have a more proven track record of success, you have to do something a little different. And that means probably spend a little bit more money and pay over the value. That's going to be tough. But
let me say my piece on that. Okay. I'm glad you brought it up because I've said this on Twitter a few times too, but absolutely. So you're a big baseball fan. You talk about it, right? You recall the Jason Worth signing with the Nationals, right? Remember how everyone talked like, oh my God, what the hell the Nationals doing? Like, how are you paying this much money to Jason Worth? What did that do? Was that maybe a catalyst? Is that not what pretty much created and started like the culture change in the Nationals? Did they not end up winning a World Series? You know what I mean? Like sometimes you have to invest into your product. Sometimes right. You have to pay a little bit more because you need to make an investment and say, we need to overpay to bring this guy in because we need to change a culture. We need to do something. And because, like you said, and that's what's coming at me all the time too. Well, why would a free agent pick here? Well, money. So sometimes you just have to pay more than what others are willing to pay to make sure you get that person here because that could change the direction of your team, your culture, and everything.
But you got to invest in what
you got. Rowdy Tellez.
You got like you look at like for a different sport, the NFL draft. Like teams will mortgage their future on something they believe in, and it's like, is this 21-year-old worth two first-round picks or whatever? And it's like, I don't know. We'll find out. But it's like if you believe that this is going to help you win, go do it. Overspend sometimes.
Need to take some risks.
Especially after underspending for so long. I mean, the payroll's been low, right? So it's like you have room. And I get it. Like when you're wrong, like with this ownership, sometimes it's kind of, come on, man. Come on, Persak. I just have a nice mustache. What are we talking about? My point, that's what I'm saying. I agree, DiNardo, where it's like, I think that sends a message. Like I think the extensions for Keller and Reynolds and Hayes, I think that did a lot for morale around because it's like, quite frankly, I don't know if a lot of people expected that to happen in this organization. And the fact that it did is like a step forward. And I mean, you look at the last time they were good. Was Russell Martin worth what they paid him at the time? Like, he was coming off probably his worst years of his career before Pittsburgh.
There you
right?
go.
I mean, again, I was in high school. I wasn't like as tapped into like the analytics. Maybe I'm wrong in saying that, but like,
no, you weren't, because there was a certain columnist that compared it to the Matt Morris signing.
Who? Was it the guy I used to work for or the guy I used to work with?
Well, it was compared to the Matt Morris signing.
Okay. But anyway, my point is like, yeah, like they overpaid for Martin, but like, I don't think anyone's complaining about that acquisition.
Yeah, right.
And you could get it wrong. I mean, they paid a lot for, or like, they were aggressive with AJ Burnett too. That was like a washed up guy. Like, sometimes you just got to do it, man. And it might bite you in the ass. It might not. And what do you have to lose, dude? Like, they've had four winning seasons since 1992. If you get wrong, just another one that you got wrong. I mean, I feel like if Ben's around for next offseason, it's probably going to be a do or die year for him anyway. So maybe now is the time to be aggressive.
At the end of the day, you're burning that on free agent signings every single year.
Yeah.
Because, like, this year you've burnt $20 million for what is accounted for nothing. And look across the state. Like, the Phillies, they sacked up. They signed Bryce Harper. I know it's a contract the Pirates would never do. But, like, they decided for a decade, we're going to buy in. We're going to try to make money here. Because basically that's what you're doing at that point. We're going to pay this guy a large amount of money. We're going to win baseball games. We're going to be good. If it doesn't work out, well, crap. Oh, well.
But I mean,
Bryce Harper's brought Philadelphia. He's brought Philadelphia Phillies back.
And they didn't hit on every signing either. I mean, they paid Kutch a lot of money. And Kutch admitted, he was like, it didn't work out. But, like,
yeah,
that's part of it. You can't.
Actually, my favorite Kutch thing ever. Was whenever they were like, why'd you sign here? You're like, you see what they paid me?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, all good stuff. All good stuff. But you're right. And like, and part of that too, not to like drag this much longer too, but the Pirates way of the Bryce Harper way, you know, like they also structured the contract with Bryce Harper to make it where like they'll be competitive here, right? They're not paying him so much money now so they can bring guys around him. And again, we're to the Pirates scale. You saw that in like Ke'Bryan Hayes's contract. Like, he's getting paid like almost like the little bit part right now so they could build around him. And so, like, what are you doing? You're still having like a well below $100 million contract. This is the year you're supposed to go. You know, like, that's why you make this signing. And he's already paid so little as it is compared to his value. And it's like, and you structure it where like the little part's coming out now. So you can build around him. And this is what they did. I don't get it. But I don't know, man. I do want to ask one more thing here.
All right.
I want to go through your mind. So Jason Mackey decides he's going to sit on the sofa, right? He's no longer going and covering the team. You're going to come in. You're going to do all the dirty work. You're going to grind it out. The beat of the team, you know, you're there day in, day out, covering this Pittsburgh Pirates team. He's on his sofa in his slippers, just writing about, you know, whatever he wants. No big deal, right? So Noah, the grinder, daily work, doing, right? Paul Skeens makes his debut. And Mackey takes off the slippers, puts on the A6, and goes on the national tour of podcasts. How does that make you feel, Noah? Any beef with you and Mackey?
No.
Come on, I want to stir some stuff up here.
No. Well, I was going to say the only incorrect thing that you said in this whole hypothetical that you just threw on me was that Jason Mackey never sits on his couch. He's always working.
Yeah, I know.
The guy is a machine. But no, I mean, dude, Jason... he's been covering Paul longer than me. He was there when Paul got drafted, and you know, he wrote the stories about the military background and stuff. Like, I get it. Like, that's his thing. So no, I'm not mad at, there's no beef. Plenty of content to go around in this space.
Fine. Is this coach talk? Come on.
No, it's not coach talk. What do you want me to say? No, screw him. Like, no, I'm not.
Can I ask one final question?
Yeah.
You don't have to answer it.
Okay.
The next Pirates playoff team is Ben Sherrington, the GM.
Oof. As things currently look, no. As things currently look, because as things currently look, this is clearly not how Ben forecasted things to be going. Now, if things turn out to be a little bit more similar to what he projected, then my answer might change. But things are clearly not going according to plan. This is not like in the part of the movie Moneyball where they're like 20 and 26 and you got fat Jonah Hill being like, oh, it's going to be okay, Billy, I promise. They get on base and it all works out. Like, this is not what's happening right now. This is not going according to plan. So that's why my answer would be that. However, if things start going a little bit more according to plan, then I think, yes, it could be a Ben Sherrington playoff team.
Is it because of their wild card now? And the NL is kind of weak.
That certainly helps. It certainly helps. I mean, what are they? They're like three games out of the wild card now, and they like right. haven't. It's yeah, like they're truly never really out of it until you're like 10 games under. So, but yeah, that would be my answer to you, Tyler. It's just not going according to plan, and it's not a thing against Ben. It's just when you projected things to go one way and they're not. I don't know. It's year five.
Yeah.
All fair.
Good way to put it.
Well, Noah, is that everything, Tyler?
I'm out of questions for him tonight.
All right. I think we'll let you go now. It was good stuff, Noah.
Absolutely. Yes.
We'll definitely have you back again soon. So we'll make it happen. Call us whenever you're free.
Yeah,
sounds good. You guys have my number. Happy to come on every time.
Damn. All I have to say is the delayed call up, right? As we talked, you gave your Nick Gonzalez performance here. It was well worth it.
Oh, man. Nick Gonzalez. I will say I have a better mustache than Nick Gonzalez.
I don't know. It was pretty good.
He didn't have this depth.
Oh, it was pretty good.
Chat, what's your thoughts? No, Nick or.
I actually appreciate that mustache from Nick Gonzalez. Like, it's good.
You know what? Speaking of chat and mustaches, Tyler.
Don't do this.
You're a hated man right now. They've been coming after me when I've been on the show. You stated on Paul Skene's day you're going to have a mustache, and you've yet to deliver. And everyone is, first off, I don't know why they're liking you. You've been getting a lot of like lately on your social media tour. You've been having on these TikToks. But no. You haven't delivered. Where's your mustache? And it all looks shaven right now.
Yeah, I shaved tonight. Yeah, my bad. We'll get there. Hey, you know what? Next Paul Skene start, if I'm on the postgame show, it'll be there.
That's what you said three Paul Skene starts ago.
Well,
and for today's Paul Skene start, you shaved it all off.
You know what? We'll cross that bitch. That bridge. Oh,
almost said that word.
We'll cross that bridge next time.
On that note. But no, for real, Noah, appreciate you coming on. And we'll catch you soon.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we'll see you in Bradenton next year.
All right, sounds good.
Everyone else, appreciate you guys for watching, listening. We'll see y'all later. Bye-bye.
Berserker Scouts.
Hey, you all. Thank you for watching. I know we try to provide the most entertaining content that we can, and we'd love to spread it to as many people as possible. So I know it doesn't seem like a lot, but if you could take the 5 seconds to like this video and subscribe to the page, it helps out so much more than you know. Thank you, and let's go Bucks.